Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, today was supposed to be one of the happiest days of New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg's life. This was the day that his ban on giant sodas and a whole convoluted bureaucracy of regulations on sugar and drinks citywide was supposed to go into effect. But yesterday, a member of the New York State Supreme Court, a Judge Tingling, which means Chris Matthews ought to like him just fine, decided that this was an arbitrary and capricious rule and that it needed to be struck down. So he did. In fact, he said that it was so convoluted with so many loopholes that Bloomberg couldn't possibly even come close to achieving what he wanted to achieve. Bloomberg is vigorously vowing to fight on, but it's a good day for at least common sense, if not freedom, in New York City.
Yeah, Greg, as I said in the morning jolt, what seems extraordinary about this is that it feels extraordinary, meaning that a judge came in and said, no, you don't have the authority to do that. You do not have the authority to arbitrarily ban one type of large drinks, but not another type of large drinks. And as he points out, I mean, your venti, mocha, macchiato, you know, Starbucks things aren't covered by this because they're more than half milk and they're good for you. Now, anybody who's actually looked at the calorie content of those things, that as yummy as they are, they've got a whole lot of calories for you. And so, I mean, really, compared to like diet soda, which actually doesn't have all that many calories in it, you know, theoretically, I believe there's much fewer calories in a large, big gulp of Diet Coke, say, than of a venti mochiata with the whipped cream and all that jazz. And so we probably think, well, why does Bloomberg make it that way? Well, because if you tried to ban venti mochiato, gooty, guppy, goobie, you know, whatever you call those things, the yuppies of New York would be up in arms with good reason, because, like, you know, people like them. And why the heck is the mayor of New York saying, no, I don't want you to drink that? However, big gulps and stuff like that. Well, Greg, that's proletariat food. You know, that's middle class and lower chow. And as a result of that, you can ban that without too much of a backlash. And so it's good to see this judge stepping in. Obviously, we're looking towards a big, long legal fight. I hope that the, you know, common sense prevails throughout the legal process, and all of these judges, you know, look at this stuff and say, look, this is not what God put the mayor of New York on earth to do. This is not the purpose of our government. You want to put up, you know, a public information campaign and say big gulps aren't good for you? Fine. But don't turn into this, you know, dictatorial Napoleon complex of I don't like it, thus the state as me, thus I will ban it mentality. Let's hope that the rest of the legal system sees things in this light. Being New York State, I'm not getting enormously optimistic about it. We'll see how it shakes out from here.
Yeah, literally. All right, on to martini number two now. And the bad martini looks like it's once again with the prioritization of the administration's spending cuts when it comes to sequestration. This initial story from CNN, United States Marines are being told to preserve ammunition and gasoline as a deal softening the impact of automatic spending cuts continues to elude leaders in Washington. Marine Corps Commandant James Amos urged personnel in a video posted online Friday to, quote, save every round, every gallon of gas, and to take every single aspect or opportunity in training to get the most bang for the buck. The Marine Corps and other branches are being forced to cut billions from their budgets as the result of spending cuts, which were triggered March 1st with sequestration. State-by-state reports produced by the White House indicated the military slashes would be seen in delayed maintenance for military equipment and canceled air shows, along with furloughs for civilian defense personnel. Of course, at the same time, Jim, you've got the Homeland Security buying enough weaponry and ammunition to fight a war for decades, if not an entire century. And just to contrast Marines keeping bullets in their shirt pockets, the National Institutes of Health has just awarded a $1.5 million study for examination of biological and social factors for why three-quarters of lesbians are obese and why gay males are not, calling it an issue of high public health significance. So priorities clearly in order.
Well, Bloomberg would blame the soda on that one. So, okay, I mean, one of my, you know, my new joys of post-sequestration life, Greg, is to go through the federal contracts every morning and just pick out the one that just looks the most least priority or the most silly in light of this. Now, look, I want our, you know, as a guy who's lived overseas and dealt with State Department employees and ambassadors before, I want our ambassadors to have nice residences. They do official entertaining there. You're kind of representing the country. I get that important. I don't know if we need to spend $704,198.30 for gardening services at the residence of the U.S. ambassador to NATO in Tervuren, Belgium. Now, it's a considerable estate. It was donated in 63. It's an important place. I get it. But when you spend $700,000 a year on landscaping, it leaves less money for everything else, like, you know, bullets for training for the troops and stuff like that. Now, this gets back to that basic point of sequestration is a rather ham-handed at best way of cutting the budget. The Republicans in the Senate wanted to give Obama some discretion in how he implements these cuts so that you could say, hey, you know what, we're putting off the landscaping over at the ambassador's house for a little while we can, you know, still pay for the training of the troops and stuff like that. And each day you can find something where you're like, really? Is that really a priority if we have to cut our money? You know, there was another $43,000 to decommission several miles of road at the Clearwater National Forest in Idaho. Greg, do you know what you do? You decommission a road. You recontour it with drainage structures being like you're pulling stuff out. OK, and then roadways will be decompacted as described in work lists. All fill material and draws will be removed and stream channels restored. Basically, they're taking away an old road that they don't use anymore. Greg, what happens if you just stop taking care of the road? Doesn't nature do it by itself? You know, but instead, we're going to spend $43,000 on this. You know, like, and the whole point is that the road isn't used anymore out in Idaho in this national forest. So there's $43,000 right there. I mean, if you really go through the budget and you kind of look at every single contract that gets awarded, you can find lots of them that either aren't needed entirely or at the very least, you know, you can put them off for a while. They certainly aren't high priority, certainly compared to, say, training our troops or the 800,000 defense workers who are going to get furloughed one day a week for a while. Or alternatively, you know, those White House tours that everybody's so up in arms about. Those are only $18,000 per week. So, you know, you don't take care of this road in Idaho. That's 2.5 weeks right there. You know, you don't spend all as much money on the landscaping at the ambassador's house. That's 3/4 right there. So, again, you just kind of the sequester may be an epic misstep by the administration because it's getting people to look at how the government actually spends its money and finding lots of examples of stuff like the study you just cited that we just don't really need, particularly not with a debt that's, you know, in the neighborhood of $16 trillion.
In addition to those sorts of priorities, politicians getting a look at the policies up close and personal, I might add, that they have allowed to be enacted. And that's our crazy martini today. Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill got a little bit more than love pats yesterday when she went through the airport. I think it was in Missouri, where she, of course, is a senator from. Here's her tweet following her experience. Today in my airport screening, test on my hands was positive. Got private, more aggressive pat down. OMG, hashtag very uncomfortable. So, Claire McCaskill, welcome to the rest of the world. And for those of us who don't like the scans and have had to go through that or have gotten additional screening, as they like to put it, it's very uncomfortable. It's very much an infringement on our privacy, to say the least. I don't know. Maybe she'll be the latest to say, don't touch my junk, Jim. I don't know.
I would pay good money to see Claire McCaskill saying, don't touch my junk. One, it's good that, you know, oh, finally, after years of people complaining about this, there's a U.S. senator who finally recognizes this or who's experiencing it and saying, gee whiz, that's not such a fun experience. The other thing, which is kind of fun, has the pat-down ever found anything, Greg?
No.
Have you ever heard about somebody getting pulled out of line because they had a gun or they had something on them they weren't supposed to have? I mean, you know, mostly it seems like the TSA agents with their 50 million in new uniforms, you know, they got a water bottle. Got it. You know, we stopped Al-Qaeda on that one. just seems like this is a kabuki theater, that this is designed to create the impression of security, but no one really feels all that much safer. And in fact, they all kind of feel like this is this ridiculous hassling, and in a very, you know, personal way. And I've said before, I don't have enough faith in TSA employees to behave professionally. We've all heard about the little notes left in suitcases and stuff like that, which is a shame because I know there are probably some more than a few decent TSA employees, but it only takes a few bad apples to spoil the bunch. And it just is, you know, I'm glad. You know, welcome to the world, Claire McCaskill. I know what the question is. You're a U.S. senator. What are you going to do about it? And I think the answer is she'll probably just see if she can, you know, fly on private jets or something.
Yeah, which she's obviously done before. And either that or skip to the front of the line and bypass it if she can. TSA, I mean, I don't know of any plot they've uncovered through regular screening or other screening since 9/11. It's obviously impossible to tell if in some way they had a role in doing so. But
you figure if they had caught some really dangerous bad person through the pat downs, they would immediately be citing it as an example of why we need the pat downs when people like you and I complain. The fact that they haven't suggests to me that, you know, other than maybe, you know, Uncle Floyd trying to, you know, bring some weed through or something like that, chances are they have not found any genuinely dangerous figures trying to fly on planes.
I know who they haven't stopped, and that's the GSA trying to run fake bomb parts through the scanners, yeah, and they get through every time, it seems like. So,
yeah.
Good grief. Jim, have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, folks.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.